In his latest novel, Larry Watson tells a story about beauty, art, obsession, and betrayal. Orchard revolves around an artist named Ned Weaver, Sonia, his model and muse, and both of their spouses. Here's Larry Watson with a brief scene.
Weaver had never known a model with this woman's talent for stillness, and talent was the word for it. For that, she did not have to be taught or trained. She did not have to be reminded or cajoled. When told to pose in a particular position, she assumed it immediately and held it without protest. Without protest, beyond that, she took to motionlessness as eagerly as if stasis were her natural state and she had been waiting for a reason to return to it. Occasionally, Weaver's curiosity, or was it his perversity, led him to test the limits of her talent. He devised poses difficult to hold, like this one, which required her to kneel on the bed but keep her body's jointed parts strictly aligned and perfectly angled. Head in line with shoulders and hips, arms straight down at her sides, knees bent at 90 degrees. Weaver wanted all the curves in this pose to come only from the parts of her she could not control, as if her eroticism were asserting itself without her consent. Weaver thought that forcing her to hold that pose, how her trapezius muscles must have knotted themselves with the effort of holding her head up, how her knees must have ached, might break her down, might force her to ask him for relief. It did not. Weaver had also hoped, when he first conceived of the pose, not merely out of a mild malice, but out of aesthetic intent as well, that it might at last reveal the secret of her. It did not.
Exploring the tangled relationship of the mysterious model, Sonia, and the brilliant but not especially admirable artist, Ned Weaver, keeps Larry Watson busy throughout his most recent novel. Larry, you didn't make things any easier on yourself when you planned the book's architecture. I mean, Orchard has an unusual and complicated structure, doesn't it?
Somebody in a bookstore recently said, well, this novel takes place in just a single day with flashbacks and flash forwards, and that probably works as well as anything.
The other thing that I like about that particular passage, I think, is that it brings out both characters' commitment to the art, but also it brings out Weaver's taste for cruelty.
Taste for cruelty. That's very good. That's very good. Someone asked me recently in an interview about what it was like to write about Ned Weaver, and I said that it worked out pretty well, that he gave me an opportunity to get in touch with my inner bastard.
Well, and what I'm interested in, I guess, is the question that seems to me you address throughout the story of whether there is any connection between art and ethics.
I think there's a very large question. I happen personally to believe that artists don't get a buy just because they make art, that they have the same ethical duties and responsibilities of any other citizen. But I have certainly known of people, writers in particular, who have felt as though they were excused because they made art.
Is it so much a question of their feeling excused, or, as Weaver says at one point in your story, the only part of his life that matters is the art. What he does the rest of the time is unimportant.
That's right. I mean, he is, on the one hand, a supreme egotist, and yet somebody who thinks of himself as unimportant, simply the vehicle for this important thing, which is the work of art.
In this case, you have two couples, Weaver and his wife, Harriet, mm-hmm. Sonia and her husband, Henry House. And there's a question, it seems to me, in each of their minds of whether the art excuses action.
Yes, I think that's certainly true for Harriet, who works very hard at overlooking her husband's shortcomings and who continues to believe, in spite of the fact that he provides her no evidence of this, of his goodness. Her only evidence for this comes not from his day-to-day behavior, but from something that comes out in his art. And so she believes this must be in him and waits patiently, has been waiting patiently for this to emerge in the man.
The man, as you said, it allowed you to get in touch with your inner bastard.
Yes.
His is pretty well displayed. He's not just willing to be cruel to his model. He's willing to betray his wife, and even his friends?
Sometimes it is deliberate cruelty, as if he's simply looking for a way to amuse himself and to pass the time. But sometimes his cruelty, I think, is the result of his being insensitive in a way that some people are who are simply out of it, who don't understand very well how human beings operate and what their feelings are.
But doesn't this make you question then the value of art? Because the way you describe his paintings, it's absolutely clear that in his paintings, he touches people in very real ways and not cruel ways.
It's a paradox, I think. It's a huge paradox. I was in a bookstore in Chicago recently, and someone quoted Donald Hall to me. I don't think I'll get this right, but here is the gist of it, that Donald Hall said, and this might have been by way of another artist, perhaps Ezra Pound, who said that there had never been a first-rate writer who was a good husband and father. And I think I understand the run of that, and its implication is that good husbands and good fathers compromise in their lives, and that once compromise enters one's life, that means it can enter one's art as well.
The flip of that would be that the great artist must devote everything that matters to the art, and devoting anything that matters to the rest of life would take away from art.
Exactly, exactly. I'm going to be in Oxford, Mississippi later this week at William Faulkner's home, and I think Faulkner said something like that a novel is worth any number of dead grandmothers.
It's a scary thought, isn't it?
It is, yeah, it is.
You know, we're condemning the artist in a way, at least in conventional senses, but in your novel, there is room for condemnation of those who are not artists. Sonia's husband, bereft by grief, their son is either killed or died, it isn't clear, treats his wife as badly without the excuse of art.
That's right. I would say Henry lacks imagination, and I'm not sure that it's the same sort of imagination that Ned Weaver has, but Henry House, like a lot of people, has difficulty imagining his way into other people's lives.
And there, we talk about the difficulty, the association of ethics with art. Henry House looks at that and demands ethics without the art.
Yes, exactly. That's right. That's right. I go back and forth. You know, I don't think that the Ned Weavers of the world are justified. I don't think they're right. But of course, an artist must be supremely confident of the value of his or her work to believe that that work of art has more importance than human feelings.
Did you learn anything about your art in writing about his?
Yes, I did. And I think it probably had as much to do with the novel's structure, the playing around with time. I thought that telling the story in a non-linear way, and again, this is something that I sort of came to during the process. I certainly didn't know this when I began, was that it might allow me to do something that was a writerly version of an Impressionist painting, so that by not putting the sections in a strictly chronological order, it asked for readers to participate in the making of the work, just as Impressionist paintings, I think, that sometimes with a dab of color or a certain kind of brush stroke, ask the viewers to participate in the making of the painting.
Are you comfortable with the way that it worked?
I am in this way. It was the way the novel seemed to say to me, write me this way. And so I obeyed that and felt as though it worked out okay. I was very uneasy about it, and at some point I reshuffled the sections to see what a chronological version would be like. But I obeyed some instinct in making the novel this way, and that it works out okay for readers is pleasing.
Larry Watson is the author of several novels. His latest is called Orchard.